your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
You're listening to Authors First on the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone, worldwide. Questions or comments, send them to dj@artistfirst.com. To learn more about our guests, simply follow the links we've provided at our homepage. And remember, all broadcasts are MP3, so share them on your social network sites. This hour, it's my privilege to introduce author Cindy Williams Newsome. Let's give a warm welcome to our guest. How do you do, Cindy?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Wow, what a great time you're having as an author. And tell our audience, where do you call home and how did this all begin for you?
Well, my home, originally I was born in Florida, but my dad moved to New Jersey, a little town in New Jersey, when I was just 1 year old, so I consider New Jersey to be my home state. And so that's where everything began for me, in a little town called Bridgewater Township, New Jersey. And I was lucky enough to have come up in one of those little places in the 60s, 50s and 60s, where it was just like a village and everybody raised the children. I had my mom and my mother, but they gave free rein, and all of the parents did, to any of the parents in the neighborhood. They could discipline you, and it wasn't a problem. And so that's the kind of background that I come from. And
Cindy, you'll be shocked to know this. We have a large, large audience in New Jersey, New York, and all of the gloomy Pennsylvania, gloomy, rainy places. Gloomy, where it's Seattle, Alaska. It's really cold. There's nothing to do, you know?
Right.
No, we have wonderful military personnel joining us from Afghanistan and Iraq, all over Europe. And thank you, audience, for joining us from every nation on earth. Wow, I can't believe the way that we've been able to reach out. And it's because of guests like you, Cindy Williams Newsome. It's you and their passion for the material that you've developed and write, and you're getting recognition. Let's go right at it. Remind our audience your website, and do you have social network sites, Facebook and so forth?
Yes,
our listeners right up front want to know where they can go to take a look at you and your material while we talk.
Right. You can go to my website, which is CindyWilliamsNewsome.com.
Wow, I like that.
Thank you. And my book is available on Amazon.com. First of all, I don't think I even said the name of my book. It's called The Vain Girl. That's my latest release. And that was the book that I wanted to basically talk about tonight. My book, The Vain Girl, is about a family. The heroine of the story, her name, people will always ask, like, okay, well, where did you get the name from? But you know what, before I even start that, you wanted to know more about me, right? How did everything begin?
I do. You know, everything has a backdrop for an author. At some point, you can come at it any way you like. I'm trying to say, hey, guys, this is Cindy, okay? And I want you to go to the website, which we've just mentioned. It's hername.com. I like that. That's the way to go. CindyWilliamsNewsome.com. Go right over there. Now, there's some things that aren't there, Cindy.
Some things aren't there?
Right. There are some things that aren't there.
Such as?
About you.
About me.
Yep.
Well, basically, there is quite a few things there about me, but let me just go into some more detail. The way things started for me as far as my writing career, I was sang with a girl group back in the 60s, me and my sister. And
wow.
Yeah, we were just going all over New Jersey. And
that
know,
is we, way cool.
Yeah, our dream was to, you know, that was what we wanted to do. And it was four of us. And the highlight of our career was we were on a show with the folks that sang Expressway to Your Heart. And that was a big show for us. And
what?
We kind of took over the show.
What an experience. What
yeah,
an
was,
experience.
And
experience. To be in, and you know, at a young age, to be in the limelight, to be looked at on stage.
Right.
And to have that gift to sing and know that people are applauding the four of you.
It must have been a thrill. Awesome. That was an awesome experience.
Thrilling. Just thrilling for you, right?
It was. And so what I did was I would write lyrics for the group in the hopes that we were going to get a contract. But throughout all of that, one of our main people in the band that we toured with, he went to Vietnam, and he was the one that was helping us, trying to get us into RCA and that kind of thing to get a contract. And so he didn't come back, unfortunately, he did not come back from Vietnam. So things just weren't the same, and so our dream just kind of dwindled out with that. And but I knew that I had a gift of writing, but I didn't know that I was a storyteller until much later when I started to go to school, and I was taking a business course. That was what I was going to college for. And the teacher, I had to take a psych course. And when we were talking about writing about love, something like that, you know, to do with what do you think of it and those kinds of things. And so when I got my paper back, I was just totally amazed because she had written all in red, you know, you're in the wrong, you're taking the wrong courses. You should be a writer because, you know, your writing is just fantastic. You have a great command of the English language, that kind of thing. And so I was like, oh, you know, well, maybe this is my confirmation. But I had already gotten confirmation from God as well. And so what I did was, with that, I talked to her a little bit more, and she was, you know, giving me some pointers and that sort of thing. And I actually started to believe that I could write. And so when I did start to write, it was just like a wellspring. And that was when I started on my first book, which was about the area that I grew up in, and it's called Hobbstown. It's about the genesis of how that whole, the first African-American town developed in Bridgewater Township, New Jersey, which is a very affluent area, and it was the first and only African-American town there, surrounded by basically white folks. And, you know, I grew up in that area. So I talk
fascinating.
About those.
Now, look, fascinating material here. A lot of research you had to learn, read, find out, go to the library, look at artifacts to assemble this book.
Very much so. I had to talk to the descendants of the founding fathers of the town. I talked to a lot of them, and by me growing up there, my own coming of age story is embedded into the work as well.
You must have been just fascinated by that history. Was it difficult to locate much, or did you have to reach outside of the community, perhaps, about some of the personages that ultimately settled there?
Well, a lot of it was oral history. By me being able to talk to some of the direct descendants and by me living there, that helped me a lot. There wasn't a whole lot of information, like at the library, about it. But it is an area where Paul Robeson also lived, about 2 miles away from that area. And so that there was a lot of information concerning that. And so that helped me out quite a bit, too. But it was a labor of love putting it together.
How long did you work on that project? Was it a matter of a few years, on and off, in conjunction perhaps with other works, or did you stay pretty well targeted on the topic?
I stay pretty well targeted. You know how you have something in your head as a writer? You have things in your head for a long time. Like, I started to realize that with urban renewal and with a lot of the elders in the town dying, you know, leaving us, I said, you know what, it was like something in my mind clicked and was like, okay, this is going to disappear at some point. When we leave this earth, there's really not going to be a history of this town. So I started then. And it took me probably, I want to say, it was actually a 10-year aspiration. It was in my head for probably, I would say, 5 years of how I was going to put everything together and all that. And then I actually started to sit down and write on paper. I had a, you know, draft after draft. So it actually took me about 10 years to get it. And, of course, I had it finished before the 10 years, but then you're trying to get a publisher. And so that was a journey in itself.
There's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
When you begin down the road with a passion, an interest, you're really pouring out your own creative energy and time. You know, you're not being paid for any of this. You know,
right,
10
exactly.
years. I mean, that's a big hobby.
it's a big one, I tell you. And especially if you really, it's your passion and you don't want it to be a hobby. You want it to be your life, you know. So it did. It and, you know, writing something that was nonfiction, because it is a historical work, it really took me back to a lot of places sometimes where I didn't want to go, but I had to go there to make the work authentic enough. And so it really kind of took a lot out of me. After I was done with it, I was like, wow, you know, and after it was published and everything, I was like, you know what, I don't want to do any historical work anytime soon, even though I love writing. That's the thing that I love.
Oh, but you learned so much about the discipline of research, background, character, understanding, and development. I mean,
staying in one person's head, you know, point of view. The whole bit, it was just, you know, very, very draining, but it's something that I love doing. I'm so glad that I did it and I completed it, because a lot, it really, not just for the people that were there, but from the town, but for others to realize, you know, how special that place is even today, even though it's changed very much, you know, because of urban renewal and, you know, new people. I mean, the houses that my dad and folks had, they might have cost them $5,000 to build or whatever, but the houses that are there now, oh my gosh, some of them are like $700,000-$800,000. And you know, had we known what we know now, but you know, when you're young, you're the thing that you think about is, oh, when I want to get out of, I want to move, you know what I'm saying? Even though it was a special place, you want to get out and you want to experience the world. But if I had known what I know now, I would have held on. We would have held on to that property, and you know, done very well. But unfortunately, a lot of people did not.
Well, we're not landing in Oz.
So, right. you're right.
The website, everyone, come on, I'll give it to you again. It's her name. Yes, Cindy Williams Newsom.com, the website. Go there right now. Go to the browser. Just put it in. And when you get there, select books. Then scroll down, and you'll see Hobbstown and other books we're going to talk about in the next hour. So I hope that our listeners are having as much fun as we are at the Artist First Radio Network. Tony Kay in the studio. Cindy, thank you so much for sharing some of the details, intimate work and sacrifice and discipline required over a decade of pounding it out and learning your craft. And you're a spiritual woman. You love the Lord Jesus, and you're devout, and your purpose mm-hmm. with God. And I'm sure that also compels you to do and say some of the things that you write about.
Oh, definitely. I have such a solid faith in God and in Jesus, and I just everything that I write comes from my spirituality.
And that's so important and meaningful for those of faith, such mm-hmm. as myself and the millions around the world who are listening right now. If you want a book, if you want literature that is edifying, you can read, that really feeds your mind and your spirit, then mm-hmm. then you need to get in touch with CindyWilliamsNewsom.com, the website. And look, you have your aunts, your uncles, your mom, dad, grandma. You know your family. You're on Facebook right now. Just tell them, CindyWilliamsNewsom.com, N-E-W-S-O-M-E. Is that right?
Yes.
.com. Go there. Tell them, and they won't be disappointed. This is any Christian with a passion for literature and interest in knowledge will be blessed by the material. So thank you, Cindy, for putting it out there for all of us.
Thank you.
God bless you, sister. We love it. And you're in for the long haul.
I'm in for the long haul. Yes, I am.
You may be writing your best work another 2 decades from now.
You know, wherever the Lord leads me in that realm, you know, it's been a journey of, you know, you have your bumps and you just have to keep on, you know, you get right back up and start again, because writing is like, it's the sort of thing that if you stop, I mean, they call it writer's block, you know, but if you stop for a long period of time, it's like, you know, you always find a way not to be writing. So I try and write every day.
And I have found that the best musicians, performers, they've been doing it since they were all 4, 3 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
It really does. You have to, if you love an artistic expression, whether you're painting or music or literature, mm-hmm. It really is just a part of the fabric of who you are and your way of seeing the world and expressing yourself.
And it's like you're driven to do it, and I love it. And one person had told me, she said, oh, she says, you know, I like to write, she says, but I find it painful. And I said, you do? I really didn't understand why somebody would find it painful to write if they loved it. So she says, just putting everything together. And so I don't know. I guess everybody has their way of going through life as an artist.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I had to play Beethoven's Seventh, the fingers might be a little brittle, okay? I don't know how far into it I would go, okay? and yet you can have that passion and desire, and yet it can be painful, I guess.
At the same
time, it's sort of like the jogger, right? Mm-hmm. Marathon runner. Give it up. You know, isn't 5 miles enough? You know, it's got to be 20. No, 100 miles, whatever.
Because, like I was saying, when I got done with the first book, that was when I was like, you know, I didn't realize how much it had taken out of me, and but it had, and so that's why I determined after that. I said, you know what? I said I'm going to write a nice. I always wanted to write a love story. But I also like to do relationship kind of writing.
The vain girl.
Yeah, the vain girl. And so when I took my break from nonfiction, I'm sorry, I said, well, let me just start with this other book. And I had been going through some medical challenges, and it involved the medicine that I took. It made, you know, a lot of my hair fell out from it. And so I just told my husband, I said, do you want to just cut my hair, you know, shave my hair, whatever? So he did. And it was very, coming from a family of 6 girls, I'm going to be very transparent here, coming from a family of 6 girls and 4 boys, my five sisters, hair was like a big thing in our family. And being African American, we spent Saturdays just trying to get our hair together.
I know. I was there in the 70s.
Oh, okay. So you understand.
I do.
Yeah, so that was one of the things. It was a big thing. And so when I had to lose my hair, it was just very traumatic for me because I had let it, it had grown such a nice length. It was like to my shoulders and, you know, just nice. And then it just all, you know, started to just look a mess. And so that was a, like an unveiling for me to you know, do that.
You see yourself differently. You're right. I think it's not to the extreme of a handicap in the sense of I lost a limb, okay?
Right,
but,
right.
But at the same time, the way that you're accustomed to seeing yourself, the image, you know, we all do it. You walk by the mirror, your eye shifts that direction. You're driving down the car, your eye shifts
right.
in that direction. We're all, someone looks at us in a way that maybe says, hey, you're hot, you know? Oh, you're looking mm-hmm. good. We look at ourselves in the mirror quickly to make sure that we don't have, you know, something hanging out of our teeth
at
that moment. So vanity and having that element of making sure that everything is sort of proper the way we want to be presented to others, our image, is just embedded in our way of life.
That's what it is.
It's everywhere.
I think we put too much stock into it as well. I mean, you can see that every day when you just, you know, look at the TV and look at some of the things that are going on there with.
I know Albert Einstein didn't like to take baths. He didn't smell good. He wore one kind of suit and tie.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, come on. Socially, he wouldn't be real popular. Well, maybe he would on Facebook. He could stick his tongue out and look funny.
Yeah, if they had the social media.
So, but you understand what I'm saying about this. We do put way too much emphasis on superficial.
We really do.
Without certain standards, you can't even get in the door.
Exactly.
Other way.
That's just how it is.
It is. So you were thinking about this as a woman. You've lost your hair. Your husband's shaved your head.
Yeah, the first time that he's seen me really with total, you know, being totally naked with my hair, you know, and of course, you know, we're taught that, you know, a woman's hair is your crowning glory, you know, that sort of thing. That's how I grew up. So anyway, what came out of that was I was dealing with that, and I was like, okay, why does hair mean so much? So that's when I started to kind of get the idea germinated in my mind about having a heroine who ultimately had all of this beautiful hair. And the Vain Girl, now, that's my heroine. Her name is Marlo Vane, but she is anything but vain. And as a matter of fact, she has very low self-esteem at some points in her life. She's petrified of a family generational curse. She's tormented by a love-driven sin that she committed when she was, you know, a teenager. And after a while, after she comes out of this huge depression, she's going to seek revenge because of all the things that have happened to her. She's also sworn to celibacy after all of this, all of these issues that she had. And but she's a beautiful woman, and she uses the breathtaking power, in quotes, of her beauty to garner pustules from love interests. And then she abandons them when they fall deeply for her, spiritually justifying her actions. And then she meets a distinguished lawyer, and he brings her life to a grinding halt. The first love of her life that broke her heart so terribly, he returns to win her back, but then she has these painful memories and doubt of her worthiness. So needing a sign from God, she devises an unconventional test of serial sincerity. And this involves her hair. So I'm not going to tell the whole story, but that's the gist of it. But there's also, with the relationships, her parents, they have some issues. Her father is a revered deacon in the church. They're a well-to-do family. And his wife, Rosette, they're trapped in a deceitful and unforgiving web, something that happened when she was young, and she did not reveal this to her husband. So publicly, they appear the idyllic couple, but then behind closed doors, their marriage is a 30-year Cold War. So for the Vane family, the journey to forgiveness, redemption, and unconditional love is a voyage of wretched lows and dazzling highs, culminating with unwavering faith in Jesus Christ. So I had some reviews of my book, and they came back very strong. They can be looked at on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com. And if anybody wants,
do you like it?
Do I like?
Are you happy with the way it came out?
Oh yes, I'm so happy. I'm so happy with the way it was published. Just everything about it was just beautiful. My experience was seamless from the publisher, you know, to the person that they had helping me, you know, to my revisions, everything. It was just a beautiful experience, and I'm so happy with the way it came out. I love my cover, everything.
You've found your voice. You've really found that level of comfort where you know where you're headed, and then how to fully execute all the elements.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, because with this second book, that's what it was, that, you know, I had found my voice, like you said, and I knew how to handle things this time better than I did the first time.
Thank you, Cindy Williams Newsom, for sharing those details about your experience as an author with us on the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Audience, thank you for joining us from all points on the globe. If you go to the website, which I know many of you have done, look it over carefully. You'll see all kinds of great information provided by Cindy on her books. You won't be disappointed. They're very affordable. And also, are they Kindle or e-books?
Yes, Kindle as well, hard, soft cover, and Kindle for The Vane Girl. It's not available via Kindle, the Hobbstown book. That's just...
You know, I can't believe it's outpaced the sales of books. And you know what? I'm happy because it's literature, isn't it?
Yes.
If we're saying we're getting more literature into the hands of the people through the Kindle, through e-book process versus a hard copy, that's okay, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? All right.
Yes.
Because, you know, if I read a book and I have it as a download and I like it, I'm going to get that hard copy.
And that's, you know, that's what you hope for. You
right.
know? And people have told me that they've downloaded, they've read a few chapters, they allow you to read a few chapters, and then, you know, it's been going. So I'm really happy about that. I'm very happy about the way it's being received.
You're on Facebook and Twitter. Are you beginning to assemble some friends there? And is it helping bring people to your books?
On Facebook, I am. I'm not on Twitter yet. I need to do that. I need to get on Twitter.
Yeah, it was
but
very popular.
Somehow, I just have not been able to do that. And I know it's something that would help me a great deal.
But Cindy, aren't you blogging? Did I see that you don't you blog?
I do have a blog set up on my website.
Okay, okay. That can be time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
Do you update that regularly, or is that for special featured items that are coming up?
I update it when I have the time, when I'm not doing something else, because, you know, we live very busy lives, you know. Everybody. So it's kind of difficult sometimes, but I just have to make more time for something like that.
Cindy, this is a total package thing. The website, you know, your involvement with social networking. You know, you can't just say, hey, I've written the book, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to
to market it.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
You do.
Really
and,
do.
And you're wearing that entrepreneurial hat. And I think that early foundation you had with the other three lovely ladies and your singing and getting up there and performing, that really is an inspiration that carries with you today.
It really, really does. Me and my sister talk about it sometimes because she, you know, we were in the group together.
So maybe it didn't come into the music industry the way you thought there, but here it is applying in this other wonderful field, the field of literature.
It definitely is. And the reason, like I said, I am doing a lot of marketing because, and especially during Black History Month, I get pretty busy because my book, you know, Hobbstown, you know, I even have a, I'm going to be doing a speaking engagement tomorrow in Philly regarding my, it's an in-service day for some educators. And so I'll be going to a school to speak to them. So, yeah, it really, you know, it's, and that happened because of Facebook. Somebody recognized my book. They had gone to school at the same public school system that I went through. They went to elementary school through there, and they're like, "Wow, I know of that place. I know of Hobbstown. I want to find more about her." So she contacted me on Facebook, and she was like, "Hey," she says, "Would you be willing to come to my school?" She's in Philly, and she happens to be a music teacher there. So, you know, that was, you know, like I said, like you were saying, you know, the marketing, you know, the social networks, they really help because I don't even know her, but we've become friends because of Facebook and because we have this mutual bond because we went to the same school.
It's great to be able to give back, to say, hey, you know, I've been able to have a family and I have a wonderful soulmate, your husband, who's supportive of your goals and your interests and your faith. And so because of that strength you have at home with him and your family, you're able to go out and give back to the community and be someone that young people can look up to and say, hey, I can achieve my goals.
Isn't that great?
It is.
Just one of the things that I really like doing. I like to be a mentor. You know, I don't want to hold myself up as being somebody that is, you know, so great or what have you, but if I can help somebody, lift somebody up and show them, you know, what I did to come as far as I've come, I'm more than willing to do that. And I always put that in anything that I'm doing, like when I go tomorrow to the speaking engagement, that's one of the things that I will tell them. And I'll tell them what my objective is, you know, for the day. And it's very humbling as well.
Wow. Your parents were busy, huh?
My parents
Did you have 10 children? Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did. There was 10 of us, but let me tell you how that happened. We were kind of like the Brady Bunch because what happened is when my dad lived in Florida, there were four of us, four children, and my biological mother passed away when I was the baby. I was 1 year old. And my oldest sister was five, and then I had two brothers in the middle. And so my aunts, they had already moved from Florida to New Jersey. So with that happening to my mother, my dad said, okay, well, we'll move up there, and, you know, your aunts have said that they would help me take care of you guys. So he moves up to New Jersey, and he meets Mary, who eventually became our stepmother. Well, she had four children, and so they got married, and they had two more children. So I had two younger sisters. So you get it?
Yeah, I mean,
totally
I do.
I
do. I totally get it. And they add up quickly, don't they?
Yes. So, you know, became eight upon the marriage, and then they had two more, so then it was ten. But we all grew up as sisters and brothers in the same house. And, yeah, so that was our family.
Are there others in your family that are artistically inclined, writers, musicians, authors?
Actually, my youngest sister, who did pass away in 2000, and she passed away in 2009, she was very artistic. She liked doing crafts. She liked writing poems, poetry, and that sort of thing. So she and I were alike in that way. And then my brother, he also likes to write. He was the one that would write as well. But I think that I'm really the only one of the 10 of us that just kind of stretched out there and said, I'm going to do it. Some of them like to write, but I just don't think that they transferred it to paper. I'll say that. But they will read, you know, my documents, read what I have, you know, that kind of stuff. But I do have a niece that really, she loves to write. Actually, I have two nieces. So it only hit three of us of the 10. But then their children, they like to write. Now, I have two daughters, they aren't writers. I mean, they can write, you know what I'm saying? Have a good command of the English language, that sort of thing. But they don't sit down and write. They love to read. So.
Well, I worry about the fundamentals being lost. That's the tragedy of it all. We need to teach that at home as well as
yes.
in school, I'm afraid.
I totally agree.
I read to my little grand. I have six grandchildren, and the youngest.
Oh, how wonderful.
Thank you. The youngest two are both 2 years old, 1 week and a few hours apart from each other, and a boy and a girl. And so I read to them. I mean, they when they come to Grandpa, they know that here comes the books.
Here comes the books. You're going to read.
You have to really get that in early.
Right.
And teaching colors, how to put together, you know, three-word sentences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really have to work with the young people.
You really do.
And it's so sad. Television won't do it, folks.
Oh,
okay?
My goodness.
You've got to have something in front of you and have that child with you and engaged, handling the book, eating the book, tearing
right.
the book. It's okay. The colors, whatever it is that interests the child at that time, then great. Go there. If they don't want you to read the book, but they like the pictures or they like
mm-hmm.
the colors, then do that,
mm-hmm.
okay? And begin where they're at. But
because they have so much technical stuff out there now that the art of sitting and reading a book is almost becoming lost, because a lot of places say, you know, we're going paperless, you know. And that's good in itself for a company, but I don't know whether that's good for a school, because a lot of the kids, I mean, these kids now, they have to have a computer. They have to do everything on the computer in a lot of the schools.
Absolutely. And
you
wonder about what happens if all the, you've got a power outage.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's read a good book. Well, what do you mean? They're all online. I can't get. Well, let's listen to some music. Oh, I can't. My digital machine can't play.
Exactly.
We're really putting ourselves in a vulnerable position, handicapping our society, I think, in so many ways. Technology and its use could be so positive and negative at the same time.
And I do agree, because, like you said, if there's an outage or some serious situation going on, and everything goes off, you won't be able to get to anything. You won't be able to get to, you know, God forbid, you know, your money, the banks, you know,
yeah.
because everything
I mean,
is,
that's why my grandparents buried it in a can in the backyard.
Yeah, how about that, I tell you.
Because they went through two depressions and said, how much can a guy lose?
Under the mattress.
Yeah, under the mattress. Hide it somewhere in the wall. Put it in a picture.
And I tell you, my gram, she didn't trust anybody like that. She put it right in, you know, where the women used to put it.
Oh yeah, my wife, right down there. There it is. You never know what you might find. Okay?
I'm telling you.
But yes, exactly.
Those were the good old days.
Right, and you know, I have to say, Cindy, nice hair.
Oh, on the cover?
yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Now, and also, Jersey, not far. You didn't go to Broadway and see the hair production. probably.
No, I didn't. I did not go see that.
I know,
that.
You were poor like me. That's okay. That's all right. We had to wait for the TV version to come out, right?
Yeah, I'm telling you.
No, I saw it at Ohio State University. It came out there.
I think I saw it probably at a college or something
right. We got it on that level because, mm-hmm. you know, we were poor folk.
On that level.
Right, and that's okay. And But, yes, hair and hair in society. And look at the hair products. Look at the aisles. You go down the aisles.
It's a big booming business.
It's huge. And now we have all 3-in-1 or 4 and 5-in-1. You can do everything with it. Brush your teeth, you know.
Exactly. And I think it's not a boom for the women. It's the men as well.
Oh, yeah.
The styling and
the scents, the flavors, the variety. Okay, it just goes on and on.
Everything, the different conditioners, and this can do this and that. You know, you have to see. You know, I used to have like a huge my bathroom with all these products for hair, but I got rid of a lot of stuff now. I got rid of it. I said, you know what, I'm not gonna be a slave.
Who did that
anymore.
Song? What is it? You're So Vain.
Yeah, You're So Vain.
Carly, Carly Simon.
We got to
have.
Simon?
We should have her on. We should. We need to have her on. We need to give her a call. Hey, Carly, get over here. Yes, you're so vain. Vain, vanity. It's very much a part mm-hmm. of, and you know, television commercials, even in radio.
All of that, I tell you, it's everywhere.
You know, now this put their picture on the billboard. You know, it's it used to be radio was you never saw those people. You know, I got a face for radio. That kind of thing. And but today, no, you know, we're in there. The radio personality's right out there. Get the TV camera in there and all
right
this glory.
There.
I'm
it's
good
amazing.
Looking. I'm lucky.
It's amazing how far we've come, but then it's almost scary because I tell my husband sometimes, you know what I say? They have everything. You can go to Google Earth, and I look at Google Earth, and I can see my brother's house. I even can see his van parked in front of the house. I'm like, oh my God, that's just so like invasive to me. And then I said, pretty soon they're going to have it so. They'll be having stuff in your house. You know, be able to see you in your house. It just feels like it's just getting too close for me, technically.
Well, it is, you know, and when everyone right now is watching Dancing with the Stars.
Oh,
you know,
oh,
I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm getting at here. The media, the proliferation, mm-hmm. the opportunity for so much more. You know, 150 stations on cable, whatever, the opportunity for information, the variety of information out there makes it difficult for authors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. It really does.
Who's
really
going to cuddle into a good book,
mm-hmm.
you know, when there's the remote?
That's right. And even the libraries are having problems like that because they don't get the people coming in like they used to. You know what I'm saying? Remember when all you had was the library, and you would go to the library?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you would sign out a book, sign out a couple of books. Well, now all you have to do is download stuff.
Can't even give it away on the library.
I'm telling you.
You know, here's my card, and then here's what you take, and goodbye. See
mm-hmm.
you later. Come back with it later. No, you can't even give it away.
I'm telling you, it's very sad in a way.
It is. It is. It's a cultural problem, and I think that academics need to address it early. They should be propagating the love of literature and reading, the benefits mentally, that the mind is a muscle that must be exercised, and not everything can be analyzed and available on a computer. Sometimes you have to go to an index file and actually find real research.
I did get rid of my Rolodex, though.
Yeah,
I finally got rid of that.
I understand, but my point is, how much was available for Hobbstown online versus
exactly.
having to find archival information, newspapers written, property, land, documents, genealogy. Come on.
I had to really, that was really a stretch to find everything. Very little documentation. And,
right, and my fear is who's going to do it? Well, when you get your doctorate, you're supposed to,
mm-hmm.
you know, get into deep research, right?
Right.
But, you know, I wonder today.
I
talk to people, they say they have a doctorate. Okay, well, I know what it means to get a doctorate, a real doctorate now.
Exactly.
What do you mean by that? Well, you can get a doctorate online now for $99.95.
Yeah, isn't that something?
We'll make you an instant doctor today. Here you go. Just fill out this paperwork, and you got your Ph.D.
Money just overpowers everything. It really does.
It really does. It's just amazing to me.
It's so sad, and it is. It's amazing, because I think about when I was very young, and we were on the road singing and all that, and then I look at American Idol, and I'm like, wow, you know, no jealousy or anything like that, but I'm just amazed that you can get on the TV, and if people vote, you know, and they like you, you know, you have the whole package, you know what I'm saying? The looks, the voice, and sometimes you really don't even have to have the voice, really. A lot of it is based on likability, and so then you get a contract. When we had to, you know, kind of, but I guess you have to pave the way, and you have to do what's. Of course, we had to do what was the norm at that time, and the norm was that you tried to go to shows, you tried to show that you could sing, you hoped that there. Some kind of scout that was, you know, out looking, and we had a manager, and, you know, he would try to get us, you know, warm and state to all these different places, and, you know, he did good like that, but it was just at that time, you know what I'm saying? It's the time that you're in, that you have to go with the flow, and so that's what we did, but I'm happy for the people today that are on, that are on American Idol, because, you know, we would miss some of the greatest voices. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry.
I understand that but they're not reading a book while they're watching that either.
Yeah, that's true.
And I wonder, are you getting your homework done?
That's true.
And then, oh, it's 11 o'clock, and, oh, I have this paper I have to get finished before I have to turn in tomorrow, right? Now they're up until 1 o'clock in the morning, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the social media, cable TV, the options that are out there just are abusive in the sense that people are moving away from reading a magazine, a newspaper, a book. It really is bad, I'm telling you. Believe me.
It's very bad. And you know, some of the newspapers around here, they've even gone out of business because people just aren't buying them.
Exactly. They're closing down. Barnes and, you know, I mean, Noble, I mean, just boom, they're gone. I mean,
yeah, it was Borders.
Or Borders, yeah.
Borders,
15,000,
right.
Gone, you know.
Just gone, just like that. And I was like, wow, we have no more Borders. We only have Barnes and Noble. And then there's another one, another chain that's coming up pretty big. Can't think of the name of it.
And you know what? Music moved the same direction. You know, you go and you used to be able to go and get CDs. And, no,
mm-hmm.
you can't get a CD. You know, they have limited libraries now available.
Yes.
And you used to be just rows and rows of getting anything you want musically in a
now
store.
Now it's very limited.
Yeah.
Very limited.
So,
well, the name of the other book chain is Books a Million.
Books a Million, there you go.
Books a Million. So they're kind of coming. They haven't reached our area yet. I think they're going to be opening a store in Parsippany. That was the last thing I heard, which is that's probably like an hour or so away from me.
Cindy, are you working on a third or fourth volume? What's going on for the future?
Actually, I am. I'm in the I went back to history now. And this book, the new one that I'm working on, it's about baseball in Bridgewater, the place in the early years. And it's actually a tentative title is Ballin' in Bridgewater, the Early Years. And we had some folks to come from there. A couple of people became baseball, went into the National Baseball League.
Interesting.
The NBA,
sorry. Okay.
And, yeah, the NBA. And they, I've interviewed the one, I'm in the process of interviewing. I've interviewed probably about four or five people now. And this was the genesis of this book came from my brother, the one that liked to write. And he had started the book, started the manuscript, and he gave it to me to look over and all that, and I did so. I looked it over, and I was giving him feedback on it and everything. And so this was around 2006 when my first book came out. And so then I said to him, maybe a year or so had passed by, and he was like, oh, yeah. I asked him, I said, what are you doing with the book, Because he loved baseball. He just literally lived and breathed baseball. He loved it. He got my dad also, my four brothers, they were, they played sports and everything, but mainly baseball was their game, a little bit of basketball. But so anyway, it came from him. And so then I asked him the next year, I said, how's the book coming? You haven't said anything else about it. Well, he says, yeah, I've been working so hard, I haven't been able to get back to it, he said, but it's coming. So then in 2008, he passed away, unfortunately. And so I said, well, you know what? I still had a copy of the original manuscript that he gave me that
wow.
was incomplete.
Wow, how wonderful.
Yeah, it was incomplete. So I said, you know what? I'm going to pick that work up, and I'm going to complete that work.
Aww.
So that's the third thing that I'm, my third book. So hopefully that will be coming out at some point. Hopefully by the end of this year, that's what I'm looking at.
Somerset County Historical Preservation Historical Award winner Cindy Newsom discusses her book, Hobbstown, visitor at Channel 22, Somerville TV. All over the World Wide Web. Thank you so much, Cindy, for being our guest on Authors First, for sharing your life, your background, and for being an inspiration to all of us. God bless you, my sister.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank
you. God
you.
Bless you.
God bless you.
God bless Artists First for what you're doing.
And
it's so needed and so appreciated.
Before I let you go, anyone out there you want to say hello to, any shout-outs to children, grandchildren, or friends, comrades in arms?
I'd like to say, give a shout out to all my fans that have supported me throughout everything I've done with my writing career and my personal life. And I'd say I love you, love my family, and I just praise God for you. Thank you so much. And for all the men and women that in the armed forces that do what they do for us, I pray for you every night. Thank you.